It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter to talk some New York Giants football this morning on Giants.com. Good morning, everybody. I'm John Schmelk. We're joined this morning by the very chippy Lance Meadow. Lance, good morning.
Good morning to you, John. How's everything?
Not a lot of sleep for the metal man last night.
Normally, they're quick turnarounds. I'm used to it by now. Ready to go.
I hear you enjoyed Tampa-Miami last night. You were locked into that barn-burning extravaganza of the highest level of professional football.
I would like part of those 3 hours in return somehow, but unfortunately, I'm not going to get those back. Yeah, that was some game, boy. I mean, those are two teams that clearly have issues on and off the field, and this is a Dolphins team that started off the season 3-0, now has really hit rock bottom due to multiple reasons. They can't protect Ryan Tannehill. That's a big issue. They can't run the football. Never in my life have I seen a box score where a team runs 14 times and only gets 2 yards. And I know Giants fans have been frustrated at times when the Giants haven't been able to run the ball effectively, but at least you're not putting up 14 carries, 2 yards. That was not a pretty number. And as far as Tampa Bay is concerned, you know, there were opportunities for them to lose this game with some turnovers and some special teams mishaps. But fortunately, they were able to sack Ryan Tannehill a handful of times late and solidify their first win of the season. It's amazing. Two teams that were winless coming into this weekend now get their first wins of the season. So everybody in the NFL has at least one victory.
Hey, as we've learned here watching the Giants play football, Lance, a win is a win is a win in this league. You get them where you can take them, because on any given Sunday, one team can beat another one in this league. So obviously they'll take the victory. The Giants will certainly take their last three. They might not get a lot of style points for them, but at this point, who really cares? And as we talked about moving forward now, taking a look at the rest of the schedule, the Giants have 7 games remaining. They have 4 at home, 3 on the road, and their next 3 are really going to be important. They're 3 NFC games, 2 at home against Dallas and Green Bay, and then they go to Washington to take on the Redskins. And if they could, Giants can figure out a way to ever win their next 3 games, odds are they're going to have a share of first place come December 2nd after they take on Washington on Sunday Night Football. Even if they win 2 out of 3, we will have some meaningful football the final 4 games of the year.
Well, they need to take care of business in the division. We've been talking about that for the last few months, given the fact that they're just 1-2. So you have 2 games against the Redskins. You have that game against the Cowboys. There's opportunity here to catch up and make up some ground. And I think that the Giants realize that. But as Tom Coughlin mentioned, he doesn't want his team looking that far ahead. And he was asked about whether or not they've been discussing that in the locker room. And Tom said clearly, you know, I'm no longer even emphasizing what the standings look like. The matter is right now, just keep winning and keep getting back into the mix. And all of a sudden, the teams that were in front of you hitting a skid, such as the Dallas Cowboys, so teams are getting closer and closer. And the focus has to be the Green Bay Packers, a team that is probably going to start Scott Tolzien unless all of a sudden they make a switch to Matt Flynn, who was just signed. And this is a quarterback that doesn't have a great deal of experience. He was on the practice squad, but that doesn't mean that this is going to be a very easy game or a walk in the park, because I have a feeling Green Bay is going to lean very heavily on the run, and they're going to have an aggressive defense to try to make up for some of their shortcomings on offense. So, you know, it appears to be one of those games where, wow, this should play right into the hands of the Giants. But don't overlook the fact that Green Bay is very effective on the ground. Eddie Lacy has provided a new dynamic to this offense. James Starks is now healthy. James Starks was a key ingredient to when they won the Super Bowl a few years ago. He was the X factor. So, you know, they take care of business on the ground. They contain the run, forced this game into Tolzien or Matt Flynn, who's ever under center, you know, that's where the Giants can be the aggressors and have the game play right into their hands. And I think that's the textbook, and that's the type of game plan that they're going to need to follow, because you don't want Green Bay to set the tone on the ground.
And, you know, we talk about the Dallas Cowboys coming up in 3 weeks. Also, you got to worry about the Redskins and the Eagles as well. The Redskins with the same record as the Giants. They still have two games against the Giants this year, one against Dallas, one against Philly. So they have four games left in the division, and Giant fans should keep a very close eye on the Philly and Redskin game coming up this Sunday. That obviously will go a long way towards deciding who's going to be in this thing towards the end of the season. And really, who's alive will impact the standings and how this season ends in the NFC East a lot. Because if a team's out of it, maybe you won't get their best effort the final game of the season, a la the Philadelphia Eagles last year, who the Cowboys take on at AT&T Stadium, and the Giants take on the Redskins at home. So who's even alive at that point could impact who wins that final week and actually wins this division. And I think both of us are still on the same page here, Lance. Whoever wins this division will have to win the final week of the season if they're going to do it.
Well, you would assume that it would come down to the wire. Listen, that's the game plan the last few seasons, where it's been you win come week 17, you're probably going to put yourselves in a good position to win some hardware. And I think that based on how these teams have been very up and down, I find it very hard to believe that one team is going to hit a four-game winning streak and take this division. So clearly, each and every week, there's going to be movement. The Redskins had caught some momentum, then they down to earth a tough loss to the Vikings. The Eagles, you can make the argument, may be right now the most dangerous team in the league. And I know we touched on that the other day, just because the way Nick Foles is playing, it seems they're going to stick with him at least until Michael Vick maybe gets back to full health. And if you're Chip Kelly, why even go back to Michael Vick at this point, considering how well the offense has performed?
I'd make Vick run a lot of wind sprints, see if he can re-aggravate that hamstring in practice or something like that, because there's no way Nick Foles should be taken out of their starting lineup. No way. There's absolutely no way. And as we talk about the NFC East and who's going to take home this division title, which obviously gets you an automatic playoff berth, I love the way the Giants players spoke and talked in the locker room yesterday about how none of them, not Antoine Roll, not Colin Jenkins, not Steve Weatherford, not Tom Coughlin even, are getting wrapped around the fact that they're only 1.5 games out of the top of the division. All the guys had the same message. We still have to play a lot better. We have a lot of corrections we need to make. We're not where we need to be. And that's our concern, not where we are in the division. And I think that is the perfect and only way this team can look at it. Because if they do not play better over the last 7 weeks of this season, the standings are going to be irrelevant, because they're not going to win the 9 games that I think both of us believe are going to be necessary to take home this division.
Well, you look at the last few games, which have been victories for the Giants, John. As I've been mentioning, this team is still waiting to play a complete game, all four quarters of consistency.
Last few games, we can go back. Let's see. I'm going to go back. Hold on a second.
You'd be hard-pressed to find one game this season.
I'm not. This season, I'm not looking at. I'm looking at last season.
Oh, last season.
I'm curious. No, I'm just curious to see. And I'm not going to count the last week of the season against Philly, because Philly had mailed it in at that point, and I'm not going to count that game. Just for the sake of arguing, because that would make this too easy.
So, and the two games before that were bad losses for them.
They were terrible losses. So let's see. Do you want to call the December 9th game against the Saints, which was a 52-17 win, a complete win? Or you can go back 2 weeks to the game against the Packers when they won 38-10, beat Aaron Rodgers. That, to me, that was a more impressive win than the Saints game. Either way, you're looking at last December, last late November, since the Giants played a complete football game.
I'd have to look back at the Packers' numbers, and maybe you remember off the top of your head. I think they got more contributions, though, from special teams in that Saints game, because David Wilson had a huge amount of returns, if I'm correct. So that, at least, was apparent in that game compared to the Green Bay game. But Green Bay, you remember the defense standing out, and what stands out to me is Ahmad Bradshaw getting that short pass and running it all the way down the field, which was huge for the Giants to set the tone early. And that was probably one of the rare occurrences where the Giants actually ran a screenplay to perfection. Hasn't happened quite often when
hasn't
it comes to this team.
Quite often in the last decade, really. Here we go. I'm looking at that box score from that Saints-Giants game. The Packers in that game had I think they held them to under 400 yards of total offense. Yeah, only 317 yards of total offense in that game for the Packers. Eli Manning in that game, 16-30, 250 yards, 3 touchdowns. Knicks went for 77. Cruz went for 36. Ahmad Bradshaw, you mentioned that long screen pass. They ran the ball for almost 140 yards in that contest. So that, to me, was their last really complete complete game. It wasn't for Jordy Nelson's 61-yard touchdown catch. They really shut down that Packers offense.
How about sacking Aaron Rodgers 5 times, too?
That's a great one.
That was a big notable stat from that contest.
And that
well.
Was their last big sack game of the year last year, too. After now, that, they couldn't sack anybody.
It fell apart. Now, they have had 2 straight games where they've had at least 4 sacks, so that has been a key turnaround. But right now, doing it against Terrell Pryor, who was banged up with the knee.
And Matt Barkley.
Correct, is one thing. Doing it against Tony Romo, RG3, Phillip Rivers, then that's a statement where, okay, this pass rush is for real, as opposed to this pass rush gives you a flash here and there.
201-939-4513. We'll break down the rest of the schedules some more as we move along. We also have the schedules up for the other NFC East teams. We'll take a look at those. But for now, let's get to our phone and say what's up to Victor down in Texas. Victor, what's up, bud?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you, man?
Hey, just good. Just a couple of things. I want to talk about the schedule. Looking at our last game, we had the Raiders. Things are starting to align for us. I mean, if the Giants actually can muster up some more offense and actually, you know, put some points on the board, we just came off a game where we played the Raiders, a depleted Raiders team without their running back McFadden and a gimpy Terrell Pryor. But look at the week when we go and play the Packers next. We're going to play the Packers without arguably the best quarterback in Packers history besides Brett Favre and possibly in the league. Aaron
hey, Bart
Rodgers.
Starr, and, don't forget Bart Starr. He won a couple Super Bowls for them, too.
Yeah, Bart Starr, too. You know, and
John was
and
a big fan. He has his jersey, too.
He does. Yeah, and I definitely agree with you. This is going to be a heavy dose of Eddie Lacy. And if we could shut him down, you know, just like we did AP, I mean, I think we put it in Tolzien. I mean, you know, we can come out there with a win. You're also going up against the Cowboys, who lost their middle linebacker, plus their backup linebacker as well, and Sean Lee, and I forgot the other
Justin
guy.
Justin Durant, and, you're talking about.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, you're going in to get a Washington Redskins team. You don't really know what you're going to get from RG3. You know, he hasn't been that consistent. So if you look at the last five games, Raiders, Packers, Cowboys, and Redskins, if we could put at least come out of that like, you know, a 4-1 record, you know, definitely you want to win those division games. I think we could, you know, we'll be sitting pretty, but we got to be able to score more points than we have been. I mean, if you look at our last 4 games, we've only scored over 20 points twice. So, and one of them was in a loss. So if you think about that, it's all dependent upon the offense. And I believe the defense is going to have to pull this out for us.
Yeah, Victor, keep in mind, too, the one game they did score 20 points in the Raider game, that was due to a special teams touchdown and a big interception return by Terrell Thomas.
Yeah, and definitely that's a great point, John. I mean, it's just something that we need to – the offense needs to come through. And the last thing, it's in reference to Hakeem Nicks. Now, I was a big, well, I wouldn't say advocate, but, you know, realist on the fact that we need to actually, you know, do something about Hakeem Nicks, get something for him now. But then I thought about it. I said to myself, I said, if we're still in this system and we get rid of Hakeem Nicks and we get another wide receiver and just say we get somebody in the draft, how long is it going to take for that wide receiver to actually learn the system? It's like at least two years or 3 years for the guys to come and learn the system. And if you think about it, I mean, are we really going to wait 2 or 3 years for something to happen with a wide receiver? I mean, because our system is very, very difficult for a wide receiver to come in and actually do anything with. So if you think about it, you know, I don't think it's a good idea to get rid of Hakeem Nicks, basically.
Yeah,
right
Victor,
now.
That's why. Go ahead. Yeah, Victor, that's why I think the Giants will retain him for another year with that franchise tag, because I think the last thing you want to do right now is for a team that's struggling to run the football, and with David Wilson's injury and Andre Brown's injury-prone past, you don't really even know what your future is at that position. The offensive line is probably going to have 2 or 3 new starters next year. Who knows how they're going to perform next season? You're going to have another new tight end. Victor will be back. Do you really want to move another piece around your offense with Eli Manning and take another step back with your offense next season? To me, that's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah, and you got to think about it. Do you really want another Reuben Randall right now? I mean, a guy, he's come along, but not at a pace that you'd like. So, and then you got a Jarrell Jernigan, and then you got the Lewis Murphy project, which hasn't taken off. I mean, I don't know if that's a case of him not being able to get reps or just not understanding the offense. But you really don't want to separate the continuity right now, especially when Eli's struggling, just like you said with the offensive line. You don't know what's going to happen next year. So I kind of backtrack on what I said on that because it just doesn't seem like it's good business for the Giants in the future.
All right, Victor. Appreciate the call, bud.
Hey, thank you.
All right, Victor. Appreciate
Lance,
the call.
I just wouldn't want to take another weapon away from Eli Manning at the end of the season, especially in considering the fact that you're going to have a ton of turnaround on defense too. You know, Corey Webster hasn't played a whole lot this year. Odds are he's not going to come back unless he comes under a very small contract. Justin Tuck, we'll see, he's having a good year. We'll see if he decides to re-sign here. The tackle position is going to change a lot. Mike Patterson on a one-year deal. Linval Joseph is going to be a free agent, so you're going to have turnover at tackle. And I think we're getting back to what we talked about earlier in the year. What's the identity of this team moving forward? Past, even for the rest of this year going into next year, are they now a defensive power run conservative team? Is this defense good enough to sustain that type of play? Yeah, they've had some good weeks in a row, but again, Tavares Jackson and one of the worst quarterback performances in the history of football in that game when they played the Vikings.
Josh Freeman, rather.
What did I say? Tavares Jackson. I said it again.
You love Tavares Jackson.
That's the second time I've
done
that.
You have an affinity for
Tavares
Jackson.
I have no idea why I keep doing that. Josh Freeman, sorry. And you had Michael Vick on 1.5 legs for a quarter. And then you had Matt Barkley, a rookie, who threw 4 picks in 3 possessions the week before against Dallas. And then this week you had a Terrell Pryor, a running quarterback, who had a bad hamstring and couldn't run. So I'm not willing to put my faith in this defense yet that they're going to be able to shut teams down week in, week out, until I see him do it. And I'll throw the Cowboys into the mix. They still got a pretty good offense, even though their defense is historically bad. The Redskins, the Chargers, the Seahawks, the Lions, and the Redskins, again, they can all score. So I want to see these guys do it against a better team before I completely buy in. Am I impressed? Yes. Have they done what they've needed to do against some bad teams? Certainly. And they've dominated those bad teams defensively. No argument. They've been great. But I want to see more before I completely buy in on this defense. It gets back to it. What's the identity going to be, Lance, for the last 7 games of this season? Is it going to be just power run, ball control, and play defense? Or are they going to have to be something else?
I would say that they're probably going to be the former, mainly because we were talking about, listen, your bye passed, your self-evaluation period passed.
Right.
If you haven't been able to get back to the big play following the bye, then what makes you feel as if this team is all of a sudden going to drastically turn things around?
Well, that's fine. If you don't want to go back to the big play, I buy that. You still got to score points. Lance, we're going the last 2 weeks, Philadelphia and Oakland. You beat Philadelphia 15-7. No touchdowns. You don't score one offensive touchdown in that game.
The defense did pitch a shutout, though, not allowing the offense to score for the opposition.
I'm talking about the offensive side of the ball here. All right, your offense the last 2 weeks. You don't score a touchdown against Philadelphia. And of your 24 points, 14 comes off a special teams touchdown and a Terrell Thomas pick, which gives you the ball at the 5-yard line. The offense the last 2 weeks has been brutal. It's been terrible. And I know you've run the ball better. It hasn't transformed into points. If you can't transform that into points, what's the difference? Who cares? You know what I mean?
They haven't been very good in the red zone. You know, they've been settling for Josh Brown field goals. They have not been able to punch it in, and that's been a big issue. It's been a big issue in seasons prior. Lawrence Tynes was on track to probably break every record in terms of total points last year because more often than not, he'd go out to kick a field goal. So this is not necessarily anything new for this team. When they get within the 20, for some reason, they have issues. Do you want to say the play calling is a contributing factor? I would say that's a reasonable factor to throw in, but I also think it's the mental mistakes, the penalties. There's a lot going wrong when they get in the red zone as to why the Giants have not become that dominant team that's able to punch it in. So they're going to have to correct those issues. They're going to have to right the ship, especially if they want to get into an offensive track meet with some of the teams coming up. However, this is the other thing that I want to at least bring to the forefront into the conversation. And Victor touched on this because Victor was mentioning that, well, listen, the Giants are going to have to score more. But look at this Oakland game. They handed the Raiders 17 points. If special teams cleans up some of its issues, you're not going to have to put pressure on the offense, to me, to have to score 25 to 30 a game. They're not going to get away with 15 like they did against the Eagles where you get 5 field goals. They're going to have to eventually get a touchdown or two. But if this defense continues to play at the level it has shown, where it takes away the run and forces the opposition to become somewhat one-dimensional. Meaning if they get Tony Romo in a position where he has to throw 50 times, if they force RG3 to throw 50 times, Phillip Rivers and so forth, those teams are going to be prone to turnovers. So as long as they continue to stop the run, this offense to me, if you ask the offense to score between about 20 to 25 points.
Well, that'd be great. When's the last time they did that?
Well, they've had to lean on special teams and defense. But don't you feel as if the way this defense is performing, John, and I understand you said you're not sold based on the quarterback play. If the defense, though, continues to stop the run, I think the defense is going to make enough plays to either put points on the board itself or hand over favorable field position to the offense on a consistent basis. I think there's been signs there to believe that that will continue. You know, they've shut down big-name running backs, John. It's one thing to say, hey,
look,
Josh Freeman.
The run defense has been spectacular. I cannot say anything negative about the run defense. It's been great. This week, Jennings had some room. He 4.5 yards per carry, not as good as it has been in weeks prior. They gave 100 yards to the Raiders as a team, not to an individual. But to me, and look, this is how I look at it, all right? The Dallas Cowboys, for an example, they played the Philadelphia Eagles 3 weeks ago. Nick Foles, I think it's pretty clear, was injured in that game at this point. And then they got to face Matt Barkley in the fourth quarter. The defense pitched a shutout. The next week, Matt Stafford shows up and throws for 600, and they have 600 yards of offense. So your performance on defense has a lot to do with the opposing team's quarterback. It's simply the fact of the matter. If you don't have a quarterback to worry about, you can stack the box against the run. If you know that guy can't beat you man on man. I mean, last week in the Raider game, Lance, Terrell Pryor wasn't even looking down the field. I was watching a couple of pieces of game tape the other day with Carl Banks and Sean O'Hara, and he's rolling out. There was a couple of times where he had receivers running free down the field, and he's not even looking. Not even looking. And look, Terrell Pryor's a rookie. It's understandable. He's learning. He's figuring things out. But all I'm saying is that they've been great. Their performance since halftime of the Chicago game has been spectacular. They've been fantastic. I want to see them do it against a little bit of a better offense before I buy it.
And that's fair. I can't really argue with that. But I like the fact that they're consistently stopping the run. And I know you mentioned that you have to take into consideration the personnel that they're going to go up against, the quarterback play. But you look at the Cowboys, for example. This is a team that DeMarco Murray was running like he was a man on a mission against the Saints early in that contest. And then all of a sudden they abandoned the run. And granted, I know the game was lopsided.
Well, yeah, they got down by 3 scores.
But the point I'm saying is if you take away one facet of the Dallas Cowboys offense, all of a sudden you're going to play right into a position where Tony Romo's going to have to throw 45 to 50 times. And if he does that, he may get you a turnover.
Hey, look, and in fairness to the Giants, I'm not trying to take anything away from their rush defense. Against the Chiefs with a competent quarterback and Alex Smith, they shut down Jamaal Charles. The first Eagles game with Michael Vick healthy and then Nick Foles in the second half and he played well, they shut down LeSean McCoy. Against the Dallas Cowboys in week 1, they did a decent job on DeMarco Murray. So look, you're right. I'm not trying to take anything away from the rush defense. I'm really not. But it comes in a package. I want to take a look at the defense overall here. And while it's been, again, I can't say how good it's been the last 3 weeks. It's been spectacular. It's been great. But, again, I don't think this week against Green Bay is going to be that fair of a analysis game either, because they have a guy who's basically off the practice squad, has played 3 quarters of professional football in his career. He's a 26-year-old kid that played quarterback in Wisconsin 6 years ago. I can't get that excited about that. So, continue this week. Do what you're doing. Stop Eddie Lacy. Make the quarterback beat you. He's probably not going to be able to. Hopefully you don't make enough mistakes on offense or special teams where you can win the football game. And then we'll move on, see how they do against Tony Romo and the Cowboys coming up in 2 weeks.
There is something to be said about momentum, and that's what I think that the defense should be able to take away from these performances. For those Giants fans who feel like John Schmelk at times, all right, listen, you can only put so much stock in the victories because of the level of opponents, that's fine.
And confidence for sure, that too.
But that getting back to the confidence, the momentum factor – You can't just all of a sudden get that out of nowhere. You need to beat the teams that you're supposed to do get that to a point where, hey, you could take that into a top-caliber opponent such as Dallas, Washington, and San Diego, and that they have going for them. Plus, they have Terrell Thomas all of a sudden feeling good about himself, getting his legs back underneath him. Tremaine McBride has been a pleasant surprise, given Corey Webster's been hurt. So these are the type of things that you want clicking before you have to man up against the top-caliber teams in this league.
Not to mention the arrival of John Beeson, and he got to get himself integrated into the system against some lower-caliber opponents, which is fine. That's actually a very good thing, and maybe he can carry that going forward against some of the better teams. 201-939-4513. Sorry for keeping you guys waiting. Let's go to Dominic in Pennsylvania. Dominic, what's up?
All right, how you guys doing today?
What's up,
bud? Well, Dominic.
All right, who would have thought at this point our running game would be better than our passing game with a tandem like Nixon Cruz? I mean, it's just, I find it amazing. The question just, for all the games we've played this season so far, why isn't Eli connecting with these wide receivers? Like, there's something wrong with him. I don't mean wrong with him in the sense that he lacks the ability to make the connection, but there's something going on. I don't know what it is. And I don't believe that wide receivers are not running their routes. I mean, I see that on some plays, but that's not every play. With a stellar improvement in defense, there's just no balance with the offense, or a balance, more specifically, between the run game and passing game. So what are the odds? And once again, I'm thinking about the taking some of the pressure off of Eli with the running game. So what are the odds that we can see Connor Hillis or Jacobs and Brown on the field at the same time?
Well, honestly, I would like to see John Connor on the field more. I think he's been a very good lead blocker. And quite frankly, I think Kevin Gilbride has tried to take some of the pressure off Eli the last few weeks. I mean, last week the Giants almost had 15 more rushes than they had passes in that game? Wasn't it 38 rushes to about 22 passes, I think, something like that? So they really are trying to take the pressure off of Eli by running the football. But here's the problem, guys. They've run the ball 30-plus times the last 3 weeks. They still can't even get to 4 yards per carry. So is running it for 3.5, 3.8 yards per carry going to help you score enough points to beat these teams with better offenses? I don't know if it is.
But they're winning the time of possession battle, at least, with that.
Go ahead, Dominic.
To me, you guys can disagree. We can agree to disagree or whatever. But to me, the X factor for me is Brandon Myers. If the guy is not going to catch the ball, he has to block. You know, and you know, you guys alluded to this at the beginning of the season. He's not a blocking tight end. So my final question to you guys is, will we see tight end Adrian Robinson playing at all?
It's a good question. And you know what, Dominic, I wish I had an answer for you. I don't. To me, they've wasted a roster spot on him for about nine weeks when he was hurt. Now that he's healthy, If you weren't going to play him, why didn't you just IR him to begin the season? It doesn't make any sense to me. I want to see this guy on the field moving forward.
Dominic, there's been ample opportunity to get him out there. You know, Brandon Myers hasn't done anything, like you said, to run away with this position. So you figure if we're already heading into week 11 and he hasn't played, what makes you think all of a sudden they're going to give him the green light? I'm a little skeptical at this point.
Yeah, the guy is just taking up space. I mean, what are we, just wasting money here? I would like, at this point, what do we have to lose with Adrian Robinson?
You got nothing to lose. But
Dominic, we agree.
The problem is they just don't see an opportunity to throw him out there.
You appreciate the call, bud.
I don't know. All right, you guys take it easy.
Thanks, right, Dominic. Hey, look, I think Adrian Robinson's been a bit of a mystery. I mean, we've seen them put guys on injured reserve for much less than that. I saw Aaron Ross walking through the locker room the other day. He looked pretty high. He looked pretty healthy to me, didn't he? Skipping around, jumping around. And when did he hurt his back? What was that, the Philly game? Kansas City, maybe? Adrian Robinson hasn't played a snap since the second preseason game. And he's on the roster. I mean, you don't think you use Aaron Ross, like returning punts at least? Something like that at this point? I just think it's a little odd that they've kept this guy around for so long. When, even now when he's healthy, he's not playing. And he has no history of NFL experience where he's shown you that he can help you on the field. It's just odd that I feel like they've kept him around for so long.
Especially when one of the needs, the glaring needs for this team, is to get a blocking tight end, an extra offensive lineman, somebody to help in pass protection, and also somebody to help Eli Manning have a security blanket in short yardage situations. And you would figure, just based on the mere physical presence, Adrian Robinson can fill those voids that I just listed. Unfortunately, hasn't been out on the football field to even experiment to see if he can help regarding that. So it's somewhat of a mystery as to why he hasn't been given the green light. I just don't see anything drastically happening over the next few weeks. I think they're going to try to ride out Brandon Myers. They're going to hope that he continues to make strides and perhaps continue to use Bear Pasco. To me, the most troubling aspect of this last game, specifically tying it into Bear Pasco, and Dominic did touch on it, you know, John Connor has helped not necessarily turn this running game around completely, because as you pointed out, John, they're still only averaging about 3 yards a carry. However, he has given a spark to this running game. They've been somewhat more productive than they were when we were talking about how bad this running game was over the first 6 weeks. And to not utilize him on an every down basis in this last Raiders contest, a little bit mind-boggling, because to me, things started to click once John Connor arrived at that fullback position, specifically after Henry Heinoski goes down. And now to sort of pick when you want to put him in there, when you want to sit him, you got to get him in there, because that's the only way that this running game is going to have some consistency.
Especially inside the 10. I think that's going to help you with the red zone efficiency, which I think is really an area obviously the Giants need some help. 201-939-4513. We have a big following, by the way, over the Atlantic in England. And we're going to say hello to one of our fans in Manchester right now, and that's Mike. Mike, good morning. Thanks for calling in, bud.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Okay, good, good. My question is, Eli has been struggling to me for the last 2 years since Sherman left and went to Tampa.
Okay.
Do you think that is affecting the quality of his play?
Well, Mike Sullivan's who you're talking about, and I have trouble. And look, I had the same argument with people when they were taking shots at Mike Sullivan 2 years when he took over for Palmer, and they were blaming Mike Sullivan for Eli's bad year. I think it was in 2010 when he had all those interceptions, or 2011. I'm not sure. You know, the year you remember it. So
yeah.
I don't buy the fact that a quarterback's coach is going to have that big of an effect on a veteran quarterback and how he's playing. I think the thing with Eli this year is simple. He's made some bad decisions. Early in the year, he got a lot of pressure from defensive linemen. He doesn't trust his offensive line to protect him. And quite frankly, he looks jittery back there. He's anticipating contact a lot of the times. He's anticipating hits. Mm. Sometimes he sees pressure that at times is not as imminent as he might think. And I think that's a lot of the reasons why he's making bad throws. It's not an excuse. That's his fault. He's got to fix it. But I really think that's the root of his problems, to be honest with you.
Okay, yeah, because I watched the interview with him yesterday, and I was a bit disappointed because his mentality was like, yeah, well, you know, that's part of the game. I mean, you got to protect the ball, Eli. You know, you really do.
And he's been prone to having turnovers and interceptions this season specifically. That's been a troubling aspect, but I think, getting back to your question, Mike, John hit it right on the nose. I mean, there's a number of factors in play why Eli Manning is not living up to expectations and why he took somewhat of a step back. And that season was 2010, by the way, where he had all those interceptions. He threw 25. And keep in mind also, that was the year that there was a lot of deflections off of wide receivers. It wasn't necessarily just Eli Manning's decision-making that season.
Yeah, there were a lot of tip balls. This year, though, in fairness, it's been a lot more his mistakes than tip balls and bad luck, things like that.
You can't really necessarily blame the receivers as much this year as compared to 2010. Although, I will also bring to the forefront that at times the wide receivers haven't necessarily bailed out their quarterback, but it's not as evident as it was back a few years ago.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate
so much.
It. You know,
all right. Take care.
Good caller, Mike. And, Mike, we appreciate the call the way in England. But I got to say, if I go to a call in Manchester, England, I want a good British accent. I got nothing.
Well, there's a lot of people that go overseas.
I understand that, but I was very excited about getting a good British accent. I got nothing. Mike, next time you call back, I want you to do a fake British accent just for me. This is all about me, obviously.
Clearly, you're a very needy person on this Tuesday
morning.
I love
a good British accent. I'm a sucker for a good British accent.
Wow, I did not think that was your turn on there, a British accent.
I'm a sucker for a British accent. I love it. Dude, I could listen to a British person talk for like an hour. They could say anything, and I'd be fascinated by it.
You learn something new every day about John Schmelk. I can't tell you how much the Giants audience appreciates
Irish,
knowing
Scottish,
that little tidbit.
Australian, Wales. You can throw all that into the mix, too.
Okay, so you're not that selective, then.
United Kingdom.
United Kingdom, wow.
United Kingdom,
you're
yes.
making this very general, big picture here.
I'm not that specific. I'm easy to please.
Maybe it dates back to when you took a trip overseas with the Giants. Was that your first taste of the English culture?
No. Me and a couple buddies went the 2 years after I graduated college in 2005. We spent some time in England.
Okay.
Spent some
so
time
you surveyed
in France
the land.
And spent some time in Italy.
Oh, wow. You
15
did the whole
days.
Thing with
oh,
Europe.
Yeah. That was a big trip.
So you already knew what to expect
yeah.
when you went over with the Giants.
Well, I think you hear enough British accents on TV, Lance, where I don't have to go there and know what one
well,
sounds like.
Well, I wasn't
like.
Just talking about the accents.
Come on.
I was talking about the cultural experience.
Bangers and mash?
Everything. A little bit of everything.
Shepherd's pie?
Fish and chips?
Sure.
See?
Lance always going for the very simple, plain stuff.
Well,
like
I'll admit, fish and chips, a big fan of that.
Spot of tea? We love it.
Always love my good cup of tea and maybe a little biscuit, too.
I'm a big fan of London, though. It's a great city. It really is.
Well, clearly, if you're a fan of British accents and you don't like England, something's wrong here, okay?
No, honestly, Americans joke around, and I'm sure a lot of people over there joke that we butcher the English language. I totally buy it. How much better does the English language sound being spoken by the English and the British and those Americans? It's not even close.
They have a little added flavor flair to it. I mean, I don't think you can really throw all
we
of us
we drag
the
language into the gutter, Meadow.
We have our own twist to it.
Anyway, back to the matter at
what
hand.
A way to get off topic,
at 201-939-4513. And again, we love all our fans across the Atlantic. They do an excellent job.
Before you get back to the phone calls, you'll be happy to know Vinny from PA, who is an avid listener and tweeter, is right on board with you. He's disappointed that he didn't have an accent either. So, see, you're catching on to all of our Giants listeners.
All right, 201.
I can't tell you that I was as disappointed, but I think I'll survive.
4513. You got to appreciate the small things in life, Lance.
I'm a big picture type of guy.
Even on one of these chippy mornings, you have to be able to enjoy the small things. Steve's in D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Steve.
I just had a couple quick comments, and then I had a couple questions. I just wanted to basically say that, number one, you know, the biggest problem moving forward is, you know, looking at the schedule, obviously. You know, I think, you know, there's some winnable games on there. It's definitely going to be tough. With that being said, you know, I just have this, you know, mixed feelings inside because I feel like we have the personnel to do it. But, you know, it bothers me because what's supposed to be one of our best players is just not playing well. And that's Eli, you know. And I don't have, you know, I just can't think of any solution to the problem other than Eli playing better. I think Gilbride has, you know, catered the call, play, you know, the play call and, the, you know, to take some of the pressure off of Eli. You know, and I just, you know, it just comes down to him, you know, gaining some confidence and playing better. So hopefully that will happen and we'll win some games and, you know, find a way to get into the big dance. But, you know, looking forward, because right, really that's really the only thing we can do at this point is wait game to game and look forward. And it's the future. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, I'm looking at the quarterback situation, and I'm just always been bothered by the massive pickup to begin with. So I just wanted to kind of get you guys, you know, opinion on what you think was going to happen with Ryan Nassib and Painter and in the future. Do you think we may look at a quarterback for the future? Will be my biggest question. And is it time to change the scheme a little bit? Because I don't really feel like one player should hold the whole team hostage if they're not playing well. And if you look at some of these other teams, they have, you know, a quarterback who was a little bit more mobile that can actually make some plays on their own. You know, decision-making is one thing, but we need somebody who's, you know, going to be more athletic in the future. I'm not looking to replace Eli this year or next year, but, you know, just looking into the future, do you think that we may decide to change the scheme and look at, you know, somebody who may be a little bit more mobile?
Well, Steve, if the Giants get somebody that's more mobile once Eli's time here is done, yeah, they'll probably adjust the scheme. At that point, Tom Coughlin's not going to be here, and you're going to have a new offensive coordinator too. So that I agree with you there, and that's fine, but that's not going to happen for years down the road. Number two, it doesn't matter what team you are in the NFL. Your offense is going to be held hostage by the play of your quarterback. And you're right. The Giants' key to their success in their final seven games is going to be whether or not Eli Manning plays better football and this passing game gets on track. If there's one thing that's holding them back this year, it's that. And that's not only Eli's play, it's also the offensive line protecting him, and it's also the wide receivers and the tight ends doing a better job in helping their quarterback out a little bit. But you're right. Look, Eli's got to play better, and if this team wants to make a run and win this division, Eli has to have a much, 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 much better second half than he had a first.
Quickly, I just wanted to kind of, that is it. But, I mean, the turnovers have been consistent throughout the whole 10 years he's been here. You could say there's been tip balls, the receiver's done this, that, and the other, but Eli has constantly thrown a high ball. He's always thrown off his back foot. That's always, I've watched him his whole career. That's always been the case. I mean, I've never seen somebody that tall who had so many tip balls. But, with that, moving forward, I just want to know, what is your guy's opinion on, the defense? Because I hear you saying, the run defense. Well, I'm not giving the pass defense a shining star, but I don't think that they have been bad either. And I wanted to know, what's your guys' opinion on the job that Terry Fuel has done? Because to me, I think it's been masterful, given, the pieces that we have, given the injuries. And I just wanted to kind of get you guys' opinion on the overall defense and the future of the defense and what you guys think about the job Perry Fuel's done. Hey, guys, I'll listen off air. I appreciate you taking my call. Great show, and go Big Blue. Thanks,
all right, Steve, appreciate the phone call. I also just want to piggyback off of the other point that Steve brought up about Ryan Nassib and how he plays into the future. Listen, the jury's still out regarding Ryan Nassib. I don't think the Giants are going to make any drastic move because, number one, he's barely been out there in a preseason game for them to truly evaluate him. He's been running the scouting team. They'll continue to assess the situation. If they have the luxury of keeping him on board and he doesn't break open the piggy bank, then he may be around to be in a position to take over Eli Manning down the road. But I don't think that you're going to see them move him. I don't think you're going to see them cut him. He's just going to be around. And then when Eli Manning is ready to call it quits, they'll then reassess their situation. And Curtis Painter is a stopgap at this situation. He's not here for the long term as well.
I think you hope that Ryan Nassib would be able to take over the backup quarterback duties next
year.
That's fair. I think that's your goal for him in year number two, that you don't have to carry a third quarterback and Nassib's ready to be the backup. If he's not ready to be the backup next year, then I think you might have to evaluate things.
There's no reason why the Giants should have three quarterbacks next season again. And I know my good buddy Charlie in Maine has voiced that on multiple occasions, that he doesn't understand why the Giants are keeping three quarterbacks. And it's a fair point, because given the injuries that they've had across the board, you'd like to take a quarterback off the depth chart and add somebody else in at another position. And the reason why they have three quarterbacks, and a lot of you out there are scratching your heads, is John has voiced multiple times, Ryan Nassib is not ready to be the backup quarterback. So if Eli Manning, God forbid, gets hurt, you can't rely on Ryan Nassib. You need another quarterback. Therefore, Curtis Painter is still around. They had to make a decision between Curtis Painter and David Carr. They went the route of Curtis Painter. Had Ryan Nassib been ready to go and he showed some strides in the preseason, we're probably not talking about why the Giants still have three quarterbacks. To get back to the defensive side of things, which was the other question that Steve had, overall, as I have voiced earlier in the show, I've been impressed with the way the defense has performed. You don't want to put much stock into it because of the level of the opponents, but look, the numbers don't lie. Starting running backs averaging 51 yards on the ground, 3 yards per carry, no touchdowns during that 5-game stretch from week 4 against the Chiefs to week 8 against the Eagles. Then Rashad Jennings had some success compared to some of the other running backs, 20 for 88, 4.4 yards. Then you look at how the Giants have done against quarterbacks. Last 3 weeks during this 3-game winning streak, they're averaging 157 yards through the air with an interception, completing just 46% of
their
passes.
Nice stats you got there.
I like to crunch the numbers after each and every game. These are my
charts.
Oh,
you actually did that yourself,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, so look, I have charts that I build.
Well done.
This is what I work on.
Well, I'm
going to
throw some
week
numbers off of you, too.
Sure.
All right. These are season-long numbers, okay? I'm going to take points per game and put them aside because the defense has been put into bad situations, by the special teams and the offense with turnovers. So points per game I'm not even going to talk about because that is a skewed statistic. They're still only ranked 12th in the NFL in terms of yards allowed per game. What would you consider another very important stat for defenses? How about third down percentage, right? I think that's a pretty important stat, right? Right now the Giants are the 5th worst team in the NFL in terms of allowing other teams to convert third downs on them. Let me find some other numbers here.
Opponents
for
have
you.
Succeeded on 42% of those third downs.
Very good, exactly. And I'm going to look at their passing stats here. Another good number is how many sacks teams are able to compile over the course of the season. The Giants have the next to last fewest sacks in the NFL this year with just 14. And now the other one I'm trying to find, if I can find it on NFL.com here, is what their red zone percentage is, which I'm having trouble tracking down here. Let me see if it's here or not. They don't have it on there. Maybe it's under total yards. Let's see.
Well, the last few games, it hasn't been pretty. Are you talking about the Giants' defense in the red zone?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Giants'
defense. I thought you meant the offense, because the offense clearly has not
been
very
good.
I can
look that up on Jesus real quick here. Let me see season stats. You want to take a look at team ranking reports, if I'm not mistaken. That's what that is.
While you look that up, John, the other thing that I wanted to throw out regarding Steve's question, he talked about what type of a job Perry Fuel has done. And I think the reason why the defense has turned things around is twofold. Number one, Perry Fuel has made some tweaks, and he's given the green light to some of his defensive players. But I also think it's been the addition of some of the defensive personnel and the fact that guys are getting healthy. Beginning of the year, John Beeson wasn't in the mix, so you added that dimension. Will Hill, 4-game suspension, you brought him now in. So you bring Will Hill in, now all of a sudden you can toy with how you utilize Ryan Mundy and Antrell Rolls, something you were not afforded to do earlier in the season. Tremaine McBride has been playing at a high level. So Corey Webster goes down. Okay, the drop-off is not devastating. You have another corner. Terrell Thomas has been a pleasant surprise. You didn't really know what you were going to get out of him. So Perry Fuel has adapted, based on the personnel that he now has within the mix. So that, combined with the personnel, I think is a big reason why the defense has turned it
They're
around.
Middle of the league in terms of red zone defense, around 15th or 16th, and they're around 20th in terms of takeaways. So their overall numbers, and again, you mentioned there's been a lot of improvement the last few weeks, whether that's personnel additions or the opponent, we'll find out in the next few weeks, and we'll know that answer for sure. But the defense has been excellent, and if the Giants can continue that defense like they played the last few weeks to the rest of the season, they'll be in good shape. 201-939-4513. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Now, Len, are you still out on the porch even though it was snowing out today?
Well, I got it. I'm telling you, I'm watching the weather hour by hour because I got a tee time tomorrow, and I'm hoping I can get to play.
Oh, man. Len's living the life
the
down
good
there.
Life.
Yeah.
Talking Giants football and playing golf. Boy, don't we all wish we had that.
Hey, guys, you know what? All kidding aside, I'm a lucky man. I got lucky. It broke right for me. Okay, let's go on to the Giants. No, it did. I mean, I sometimes it breaks right, sometimes it doesn't. I'll be the first to admit, things broke for me. It's good. I'm living good, guys.
Your blessings, Len. It's all good.
Yes, absolutely. I do that every morning. Honest to God, I do. You know, the three quarterback situations. Once we made the pick, we were going to keep three quarterbacks. Now, let's assume at this point we deactivate a quarterback. We cut one quarterback, whoever it happens to be. I mean, it's not like we're going to go out and pick up Dick Butkus. I mean, we're talking about guys who are not in the NFL. I mean, we're going to be marginal NFL players. I mean, you know, it is what it is. Jerry went with the quarterback in the fourth pick. And it guaranteed we were going to carry three quarterbacks. I mean, that's just the way it is. We just live with that. You want to argue about whether or not it should have been a quarterback pick at the point? That's a whole different story. If I could ask one question to Jerry, and I'm a big admirer. I'm a big fan. I think he's done a terrific job. If I could ask him one question, if the fullback is such an important position to the Giant offense, why did we go into training camp with one pure fullback? 90-man roster, and we go in with one fullback.
Well, I don't get it. Frankly, Len, I don't think the Giants think the fullback position is very essential. I mean, Henry Anoski, even when he was here and playing last year every week, I mean, he's out there for what? I'd say 30%, 40% in most of the offensive snaps?
Yeah, but look how much time, guys, look how much time the callers are devoting to talking about Connor. And he's done a fine job for us. And that you've talked about Connor. Mostly in positive. There's nothing been nothing negative. It's been in positive terms. Like the fullback is an important position. If the fullback is such an important position on this team, next year we should carry two fullbacks on the active 53-man roster.
Oh, no, you can't do that, Len. You can have two fullbacks in training camp, compete for the job, but there isn't one team in the entire NFL, besides I think the Oakland Raiders actually, that carry more than one fullback on their active roster.
And Len, Bear Pascoe is essentially your second fullback.
I
know, granted, you're not getting all worked up over him, but he is, by trade, another guy that could play that position.
Well, I would like to ask Jerry, why didn't he bring in two? And then when Henry got banged up, okay, Henry was going to come back. We gave him a shot to come back. It didn't work out. I mean, the offense sputtered, preseason, it sputtered with Bear coming out of the fullback slot. I mean, everything got messed up right from the beginning. That's the one question I'd like to ask Jerry. And again, it's not a major criticism. I'd just like to know what he was thinking. When you guys talk about 38 rushes for 115 yards? I think you said
118, I think he had.
115. You mean in terms of the total or just Andre Brown? Who are you talking about, Len, as a team?
No, totally.
Yeah, 138 as a team, correct.
Okay, and it was 3.8 was the average? Is that what you said?
It was in that ballpark, correct.
The point was it wasn't even 4 yards. That was the point. If you take out 5 or 6 kneel downs by Eli at the end of the first half and at the end of the game, this is a serious.
Whoa. Oh, there goes Len. We're having some weather here with the snow, so maybe that has something to do with it. Usually we get the dial tone. We usually get the beep, beep, beep. That's a new one.
And I think what Len was just about to discuss was you take away Eli Manning had 3 kneel downs for -3 yards. So you eliminate that, the yardage per carry is going to go up, and then you're in the vicinity of 4 yards per carry, which is fine. And listen, I think the running game has improved. It's been baby steps. It hasn't been them going from 2 or 3 yards to like 6 yards per carry. And no team is all of a sudden going to turn things around that quickly. But the addition of Andre Brown, the addition of Peyton Hillis, and when they've utilized John Connor have been the difference makers. If they can find the best way to balance those three moving forward, I think that you'll see the numbers get up towards about 4 yards per carry. And this offense is going to have to rely on the running game because the big plays are not magically going to reappear. You can make the point that if you continue to run the football, you hopefully get the defense to bite and that the defenders come back closer to the box, and therefore maybe that will open up your passing game a little. But I don't think it's going to open up a tremendous amount. So therefore, they're going to have to rely on the short passes and the running game. Andre Brown being able to handle 30 carries is a positive, but you're not guaranteed to be able to give him 30 carries each and every game. So you have to give Peyton Hillis some balance. You can't have it be 30-5 ratio. You just can't. It needs to be more, not necessarily equal, but I think it needs to be in that 2-1 ratio moving forward.
And NYG Cap Central chiming in on Twitter, not a good idea to have two fullbacks on your final 53. A backup tight end can function as a backup fullback. That's the point that Lance made, and I think that's 100% right. You can't have guys, and look, they can contribute on special teams too, especially on return teams, but I don't think you want to have two fullbacks on your active roster.
Well, and you brought up the Raiders as the perfect example. Marcel Reese is a fullback, but he could be a running back. He could be a receiver.
Yeah.
If you're going to have another fullback, he better be able to contribute in other facets on offense.
And he also pointed out the Ravens, he believes, has two fullbacks on their active roster, Vontae Leach and Kyle Juszczyk. So I don't think there are many other teams that do, though, to be honest.
And to be honest with you, when you have a guy like Vontae Leach, you really don't need to have another fullback.
Remember,
though this season it's been dreadful. I know.
They cut him, too. He was a free agent.
But they brought him back,
time.
Though.
Yeah, but for a much smaller cap number.
Well, the reason why he was on the market for a while, because Leach was demanding a lot of money, and he's a Pro Bowl-esque type of player, so he deserves to be paid, and therefore there was nobody else willing to sign him, so therefore Baltimore was able to bring him back. And clearly they've struggled because Ray Rice has not had many holes this season.
By the way, folks, just a heads up, that phone blip was not just to Len. All our calls got knocked down. So if you guys want to call back in, we still have a dial tone, so we're thinking it's working. you want to call us back and sneak in. But Lance and I are going to start to wrap up here. We can go through our picks if you want to bring those up, Mr. Meadow.
Before we do that, though, I can't believe you're overlooking one of these tweets.
I wanted you to bring it up.
People were responding to the fact that you were so caught up in the British accents. So, at Koss85 brings to everyone's attention that there's a Giants fan club in the UK called at NY Giants Fans UK.
Spell that out for him, please.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that everybody was clear. Listen, spelling's key when it comes to Twitter. You can't take the names for granted. So he's claiming that you should come visit and you can listen to all of their accents.
I love that.
So the invitation is wide open.
If he wants to pay for the flight, I'll be on the first flight out to London. Hello?
Can take in some football that their country is known for.
Right.
Listen, well, anytime you want to leave, we'd be more than happy to.
Hey, look, the NFL is trying to expand their things to London, and I would not be. Look, I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know how the logistics are going to work out. You know, God forbid they have to play a team on the West Coast of the United States. But I would not be surprised if within 10 years we see a team somewhere on that side of the Atlantic. Would not shock me.
Well, the Jacksonville Jaguars probably at the top of the list.
Yeah, Buffalo Bills in the mix, too.
Be a lot of wear and tear in terms of the travel.
San Diego Chargers, perhaps. They'd have to realign the divisions if that happens, but that's another team that's looking for a new building. Falcons are getting a new building, by the way, in downtown Atlanta. I like the Georgia Dome, too. That's a shame. That's one of my favorite road stadiums, actually. Nice building. Great dessert spread in the press box. Pies.
Little things you recall. Yeah. You actually told me that the Eagles had good desserts, and I wasn't necessarily impressed.
No,
when I
the Eagles. The Eagles apparently lost their deal with a certain snack cake company, so they no longer had them in the press box anymore.
It's amazing how you could do an entire show explaining why things have fallen apart in certain press.
Well,
boxes.
When you're visiting press boxes for 8 deal. Years,
I
you
mean,
know, you learn stuff.
The chef went on strike.
No, they had a sponsorship deal with a certain snack food company. I don't want to mention any names. It's not
of
one of our sponsors.
Not. Yes,
but that deal apparently ended, and those. It was no longer in the press box. I thought those slices of chocolate cake they had were excellent.
I
enjoyed it a lot. I
have not experienced that, so I'm not going to be able to throw my opinion out there.
They also have the soft pretzels in the Eagles press box, which are very tasty.
Yes. Paul DiTino's a big fan of
he
those.
He liked
I
four
noticed.
Of those,
oh,
right?
He had maybe five or six, to be honest, for those of you counting at home.
Yeah, he did a lot of walking to make up those pretzels.
Well, he's got those white pants. He now dresses the part.
Well, if you're going to wear white pants around, you better be in good shape. You know what they say white pants do to you.
I don't want to go there. I think there's been way too much talk about Paul DiTino and his legs and everything else to my liking. So I don't want to go there.
Come on. Look at you. You're a fashion guru, obviously. No?
Trust me. I don't want to talk about DiTino's pants. One other comment regarding
man.
The British accent. It gets better and better with the material that we have out here on Twitter. Seven with a T, at seven with a T. If Anne from D.C. had a British accent, you would be an advocate for another Revolutionary War.
I could have seen myself being a loyalist during the American Revolution. I can see that happening. I'm a bit of a contrarian sometimes.
Well, this is what I'll say to that UK fan club at COS 85. You get John an ISDN line that is functioning in the middle of London.
I don't think they
we
have ISDN
chip
lines
in
London.
For the ticket. How did you do the broadcast then out in London?
They had to like specially install them. It was like it was a big
really?
To-do. Yeah, it was a bit of a pain.
Well, if
to be
you can get some
you.
Type of fiber cable, okay? let's keep it big
okay,
picture
that's fine.
Here.
All right.
We will ship John to London.
You just want to get me out of here.
I mean, we could lose you for a week. It's not a big deal. We'll have an extended bye.
I'm sure my fiance would be thrilled. Get me out of the apartment.
A quiet
for a
house,
week.
Exactly. The stress of the wedding building up, you know. I'm sure you guys could use some time away. I can imagine what those conversations are like. We may have to have a show breaking down that.
Mike Farmer, the Sonics will be back in the NBA before they have a team in London. I think that's probably true, though. I think you'll have a team in Seattle again in the NBA. Sometime, I'd say, in the next 5 or 6 years. I think that's fair.
There's already been some talk. There's been some negotiations. The problem is they've fallen through.
Well, the Kings are going to stay in Sacramento now. So
that was the closest team.
So that's not going to be it. I mean, I imagine the Hawks could probably use a new building.
Well, they've been talking about expansion. I don't even think they're going to move the team. No, there's been a lot of talk about expansion.
No more expansion in the NBA. Come on. I got to watch Zaza Pachulia play center now. Who else are you going to have
playing
center?
Look at this. I can tell you're already scouting some of the opponents. Hey, you should look at this as a positive. You know, the Knicks could use all the help they could get. So you throw in an expansion team, that's at least another victory for them. Those blogs have been tough to write these days, I see.
Not the way they're playing. They wouldn't even be an expansion team right now.
You want to get to the picks?
Yeah, we can. No, I don't know how an NBA team in the first five games of the new season, like, have three no-show performances. It's a mess.
Well, that's what happens when you lose your center and you're trying to rely on some new faces.
Yeah, nobody tries. That's the problem. Man. They should play hard. Anyway, do the picks. Let's go.
I know you don't want to get into it. It's a sensitive topic.
I'm going to get cranky. I don't want to get cranky. And
your
Bulls, by the way,
situation.
Not much better. And Derrick Rose.
They beat the Cavs the other night.
And Derrick Rose with the bad hamstring now.
Let's not.
Look out.
Let's not overreact to that. First of all, I love it how the reports were it was a knee injury. And
oh, I didn't even hear that.
Yes, that was what the report was following the game. Then Tom Thibodeau comes out and says it is a minor strained hamstring.
Well, you're assuming he's telling the truth.
Well, he's going to undergo further tests today. For those of you clearly who are very interested into the ups and downs of the Chicago Bulls. I mean, we've covered just about everything.
Get to the picks.
British accents, but we give you everything here on Giants.com. And we also give you our picks, which are mediocre at best.
Oh, boy. It was a rough
week this week. Anything to write home about. Everyone was 500 or below this week.
Also, Salmo was 6-3-3. He was very proud of himself.
Correct.
He didn't ask him about the picks for
there were
like
four
a few
people
days.
That went 3-3.
Okay. I'm assuming you were one of them.
Yes. Yourself as well, so you could.
Oh, I thought I went 2-4.
I can make an adjustment.
No,
you like.
I'm happy
no
to say I went 3-3.
Because you're tied with me.
What was my third win?
Pittsburgh. Did you remember that one?
Oh, no, I forgot Pittsburgh was my wild card team.
Yes.
That's one I forgot. All right, cool. 3-3. I'll take that. What did the great Paul Dottino do?
Dottino went 3-3 as well. But see, nobody was able to catch
any ground.
Exactly. The problem was. He took Miami in the wild card, so he got that wrong. He took Baltimore over Cincy, which that game could have went either way.
I thought Baltimore was going to win that game.
I thought Cincy was going
to
win that game.
Well, you picked him to win to make the Super Bowl, so of course you're trying to ride your prediction
a little bit. On paper, this team looks great. On the field, it's a whole other story. Plus, they did lose one of their best defensive players. Let's not forget about that. Geno Atkins is out for the season.
That's a big
loss.
He's
one of the best pass rushers in the NFL.
And a good run stopper, too.
True. So that's going to hurt them somewhat. Especially when the secondary is getting up there in age. But everybody went 3-3. Nile went 2-4. And Anita, who has been very good in terms of getting her picks in, we need to commend her for that, continues to ride out this streak of
you,
going 0-6.
I think that's the highlight of your week, riding down her 0-6 every
I'm
week.
I'm not going to deny
look,
that.
Look how he's
I am giddy. I am giddy.
He's
I'll
smiling ear to ear over here.
Well, because, listen, is it asking too much?
No, she clearly has given up. She's
no responses to the emails
anymore. She's thrown in the towel.
And she was a big proponent of having the picks to begin with, if I recall.
That's correct. She also failed to put that fantasy weekly fantasy thing
there
together
you go.
As well.
All talk, a lot of chatter. I'm a show me guy.
We have
that's what I am.
Two more guys have gone back on the line, by the way, after our phone issue with the snow here. So we have Carlos and Ed on the line. We'll take them both before we close and say goodbye. We'll start with Carlos in Virginia
first. I hope
first.
They both have British accents, by the way.
I don't think either one does, but that's okay. Carlos is one of our favorite callers. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing all right, Carlos.
All right. Real quickly, I've been hearing a lot of, you know, people saying about, you know, some of the woes that the Giants are going through, whether it's being on offense and defense. But I think it's got to start on special teams. I mean, is there anybody on the roster that could return kickoffs? Because I think, you know, with David Wilson gone, you know, he was one of the best.
Hey, look,
you know, that we have on the roster.
Carlos, the easy answer is Michael Cox. He did it in the preseason. I think he did it fairly well, to be quite honest with you. And if he's going to be active on game day, I don't see why you don't use him returning kicks.
Yeah, I mean, because when I was looking at, you know, the game on Sunday with Oakland, you know, when they had Gerald Jernigan, if I'm not mistaken, that was out there, you know, I mean, he just coughed it up, and I mean, and that just gave Oakland some easy points, and I mean, and you really cannot do that, especially, you know, special teams being so vital, and very, you know, I mean, it's just as important as you know, as offense and defense, because you're giving, you know, the quarterback, you know, some good yardage, some good yards so they can go ahead and make a quick touchdown. You know, and to me, I mean, I don't see, you know, I mean, I've seen Michael Cox, you know, returning kicks, but, I mean, they should have started him, you know, ahead of Jernigan. I mean, you know, this is a matter of opinion.
Well, and I think you have a valid point there. Michael Cox should be a key contributor on special teams. I think he showed that in terms of the preseason. Unfortunately, they went away from that. They gave the ball back to Jarrell Jernigan, and he's been turnover prone. And Tom Coughlin was actually asked about this, Carlos, when he met with the media the other day, and they asked him, so is Jernigan possibly going to lose his spot? Are you going to change things up? And clearly Tom gave his typical answer, we'll see, which he tends to do more often than not. Whether or not that means that they're going to make a change or they're contemplating a change, I don't know if you can read that much into it. I don't think they're going to make a drastic tweak to the personnel, but your point is well taken. Michael Cox, to me, has provided a spark when he's been given opportunities. It's a matter of whether or not he could sell that to the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, especially now with the division being as, you know, as wide open as it is right now, you know, I would think it, you know, it would make a lot of sense, especially, you know, going into the game against Green Bay, that, you know, they would, you know, use him for kickoffs.
Well, especially it's a game, Carlos, that you don't want to give Green Bay a gift, because if you're going to play Scott Tolzien, who doesn't have a lot of experience, the last thing you want to do for a quarterback like that is give him favorable field position, just like they did for Terrell Pryor and company. Listen, the Raiders are having that lead at the break because the Giants gave them 17 points because of turnovers. So if the Giants avoid that against the Green Bay Packers, then you're forcing Green Bay to have to put together lengthy, sustainable drives. That's not something that they forced Oakland to do. So that's something that they're going to have to put Green Bay in the position to do. Put their backs against the wall. Make Tolzien try to make some plays and win that game single-handedly. That, to me, plays right into the hands of the Giants.
Yeah, pretty much just letting them force the turnovers.
Correct.
All right. Yeah, thanks for your call.
You got it, Carlos. Thanks so much for chiming in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter.
And our final call of the show is Ed in Houston, Texas. Ed, good morning.
Morning, guys. 64 and sunny, clear skies, no snow in Houston.
We are jealous of you, Ed.
Yeah. Shorts and a T-shirt, fellas. I'm in the front yard right now. It's wonderful.
Wish yeah. I was with you, Ed.
Do you have the rocking chair like Len from Columbia, Maryland? That's the big question, Ed.
There you go. I'm retired, but I'm not ready for the rocking chair yet.
Okay.
Now, better question, do you have a tee time anytime in the next week or so?
I don't play golf. I'm a sailboater.
Oh, sailor. Nice. Okay, we like it.
Oh, and last weekend, shorts and a T-shirt on Galveston Bay. You got to move down here. It's nice.
Sounds like a plan, Ed. What's going on?
Well, if we can't get John to London, we'll settle for Houston. How about that, Ed?
Well, you've got John in white pants and a suntan. I mean, that's tropical.
I'll tell you what. John Schmelk, John Schmelk does a lot of things. There's one thing he does not do is tan. I burn. Texas is in a bad place for me, let me tell you, Ed.
Hey, years ago, getting back to football, years ago Parcells said, if you want to win in October, November, and December in New York, you win with a strong defense and a dominating ground game. And that's what got him to Super Bowl 42 a few years ago. And over the last few years, the team has transitioned to more of an aerial circus and the kind of a sometimes on, sometimes off defense. Considering all the chaos and imbalance this year, do you guys foresee them getting back possibly with the right personnel to get back to a little more stability, run the ball more, throw the ball a little bit less, and emphasize building that defense back up to what it once was?
Well, I think they're going to have to do that moving forward, Ed. I think that we've seen a taste of that the last few games. The breakdown was about 38 runs and 22 passes this last contest. And the bottom line is, if this team is going to be turnover prone, I don't see why you would want to go back to having Eli Manning throw 45 to 50 times. I think the way this team has succeeded the last few games has been when they've gone to the ground and pound. It hasn't been pretty. They haven't gotten a great deal of yards per carry, but now that you have at least Andre Brown in the mix, Brandon Jacobs is getting healthier, you potentially could balance off of three running backs, divvy up the carries, and if Eli Manning only has to throw 20 to 25 times, I think that's a recipe for a victory. I don't think they're going to resort back to some of these previous contests where it's so lopsided and Manning throws 50 times and they run the ball about 10. And the reason they were put in that position is because they had to play catch-up. Now they've been in a position where they've been playing with leads, and the way to do that, the way to win the time of possession battle, is to run the football. So I think that's the direction that you're going to see this team moving in going forward, at least for the remainder of this year.
Well, hopefully when they get to the draft and free agency, then maybe they could acquire the personnel to achieve that balance and try to run the ball more as they did a few years ago. You know, before you'd made a statement about their ability to get sacks, but if they don't get in the end zone and score points, there's no real motivation for the opposition to throw a lot of passes because they're never far behind because the Giants aren't scoring that much. So if the opposition doesn't try to throw the ball because they don't have to catch up, then there's less opportunities for sacks. So that's, I think that contributes to the fact that the sack totals are down this year as well.
No, that's fair. Look, in the past, the Giants have gotten leads in some of these games, and then the pass rush has been able to tee off. That certainly hasn't been the case this year. I agree with you there. And I believe also the strong play of the defense has allowed the Giants to pursue this type of running attack over the past 3 weeks, where the Giants haven't had to play catch-up, so they've been able to run the ball a lot more and achieve that balance that Tom Coughlin's looking for.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your input, and I enjoy your show. You guys do a really good job.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate
call
that.
In anytime, man. We appreciate it, and have fun on the boat down there in Houston. That sounds
nice. The question is, does the phone app work on the sailboat?
I'm not sure they have good cell service in the middle of the bay. I'd say probably not.
We need to
was that,
get
Galveston Bay,
he
said?
Yes, he did say that.
I don't think Nele has any pull when it comes to cell phone
if
towers.
You have the title of tech guru, you should be able to work out some of the issues.
That isn't actually
the Giants
a fans. Real title, though. That's one that
no,
you made up for
of
him.
Of course it's one that I made up. But what do you think? We're going to promote it on Giants.com and have his photo? We're not going to go that far.
Tech guru. You're an idiot.
Not going to deny that either. So in terms of the standings with the picks.
And by the way, just for the record on Ed's point, the NFL is no longer a run-the-ball defense type of league. Now, are the Chiefs doing that this year particularly well? Sure, that's because their defense is epically good. I mean, it's been ridiculous all year long. Generally speaking, in the NFL the way it is now, you're going to have to throw the ball to win. That's just the way it is.
Well, look at the San Francisco 49ers. Kaepernick's averaging about, what, 90 yards through the air every game. I mean, it has not been.
He's got to be
They've
more than that, right?
I'm telling you. I mean, the last few games, it's been 90. Overall,
correct.
I bet
well,
you.
That's fair.
I bet you it's within the 150 range. You look at the amount of pass
well,
attempts and the amount of yardage, it is not very high.
I'm curious. Now, he hasn't
been
hurt,
heavily
right?
heavily on the run. No, not that I know of in terms of reported
missing
injury.
Games or anything.
Yeah, they've been leaning on
Let's
Kendall
see.
Hunter, Frank Gore. LaMichael James.
Overall stats this year, he's played in 9 games, has 1,675 yards. That'll put him somewhere around 180 or so yards per game.
And if you take away the first game of the season, which was that offensive clinic against Green Bay, I guarantee you the numbers are even lower.
Also, some wide receiver issues in San Francisco, too. No Manningham the whole year.
But do you really think...
No,
that's
no.
going to
it's
save
been,
that
it's
team.
It's been poor. It's been poor. No question. They have not passed the ball well.
To me, they've been extremely one-dimensional. And you could get away with that at times when you have a very strong defense, which
keep
San
in
Francisco
mind,
does.
How many years of first-round picks have the Chiefs and the Niners had to build those defenses up? They've been bad for a lot of years to get all those draft picks. The Giants, obviously, not in that situation.
But if you get it right over the span of a number of years, now you can get a period of stability.
Right, but when you have a quarterback like Eli Manning, you want to use him. And you can invest all this money in him, which I know some Giant fans aren't happy about. But the Giants are going to invest a lot of money in Eli Manning. You want to build your team around him.
Well, and the two teams that you just named until recently had no stability at quarterback.
Great point.
Alex Smith. Was very up and down for many years because of the change in offensive coordinators. Then they got rid of him. He goes to Kansas City. Kansas City was a team that was a revolving door in terms of the quarterbacks. Now, Matt Cassel got an opportunity after that breakout campaign with New England once Tom Brady went down. And because of offensive line and a lack of weapons around him was not very good. So, you know, that's another reason why those teams were in periods of lack of success.
Give me the standings before we say goodbye.
Well, I have to tally them as we go, but the Tino did not really make much movement, so he is now 36-19, sitting
well,
all alone in first place.
I feel like if we take away some of his easy, you know, picks in the beginning of the year before we put in our rules and regulations, his record would be worse, but you can't go back in time and fix that, unfortunately.
Dan Salamone, in sole possession of second place, also went 3-3, so he's now 34-21.
Danny, proud of himself.
You and I were both 29-20, and we both went 3-3, so we are now 32-23.
So how many games behind the Tino are we?
We are 4 games behind the Tino.
That's not terrible.
And we are 2 games behind Salamone.
All right.
then we have the significant drop-off, as I like to call it. The tech guru, as I like to call him. Nele, who went 2-4, is now 25-30.
Some of his picks, man, he really just
takes a lot of risks. He takes a lot of risks. But, you know, sometimes you got to do that to separate yourself from the rest of the pack. Sometimes
and he has separated himself from the rest of the pack.
I
just
was gonna
not
say,
the way
you
he was
move
open.
Up, and you also move down as a result of that. And then, in sole possession of last place, who has done a tremendous job in getting the picks in, has had a tremendous amount of success over the last few weeks. These picks are so good, I can't even break them down. Falling to 20-35 on the season. 15 games below 500. So that sums up the latest standings. Tino still setting the tone. Dan right behind him. And you and I neck and neck in that third spot.
Will you stop instigating Mike Farmer on Twitter, by the way?
Some people deserve pats on the back once in a while. Mike Farmer meets that criteria. You, on the other hand, I don't know about. And he brings up some very valid points on Twitter. He's also waiting for you to maybe click on that button on Twitter.
You're lucky I follow
you.
Can
give him some attention. You know there's a benefit to following me. You just won't admit it. You'll find that benefit eventually. Tino, on the other hand, we need to get him to follow. That's the big disappointment. Yeah,
and he's like your partner on the air now, too. This is becoming...
He's been my partner for years. This, what are you talking about? It's not just this season. I've worked with him dating back to many years.
This is becoming borderline insulting.
It is insulting.
I think you need to bring it up on the next radio pregame show.
It will definitely have to be brought up. Plus, it's a good way to throw out my Twitter handle. So I like that idea.
Lance always
looking
like for self-promotion.
I like your thinking there.
Maybe we could try to integrate Twitter more into the pregame.
We should. Listen, social media is big.
Well, we could do it more now with the 2 4 o'clock games in a row. Actually, 4 4 o'clock games / night games in a row. So 4 extended pregame shows on WFAN. They extend to 2 hours and 2 hours and 15 minutes, respectively. So maybe we can slip in a little Twitter action.
I like that idea. And on another note, in terms of the flex schedule, I would say there's a good chance that they're not going to move that Giants-Redskins game. Is that fair?
I think it's staying put.
I was looking at the schedule in case the league may think that they have a more attractive option. Denver plays Kansas City again, but CBS is not going to lose both matchups in one season.
You wouldn't think.
So that will be protected. And outside of that, there's not a lot of other games to me that would appeal to a national audience. Cincy plays San Diego that week.
Oh, no.
Arizona
Two
plays
small
Philly.
Markets. No.
So you really don't have a lot of options. I would say it's safe to believe that the Redskins-Giants game will remain in primetime, and that, at least right now, is the only remaining primetime
game. And frankly, at that point, if the Redskins beat Philly this week, which is a possibility, the Eagles can't win a game at home, and if the Giants figure out a way to beat Dallas in 2 weeks, that game could very well be for potentially first place in the NFC East.
It'll have a lot
That's
more intrigue.
That's how crazy this division is.
More of a reason that they should keep it in primetime.
We thought this is how this division would go at the start of the year. We thought 9-7 would win it, I believe. Or did we say 10-6? I thought we said 9-7.
9-7, I think, is where we were leading.
Yeah.
Especially once the first 2 weeks of the season wrapped up.
Yeah.
So and how this team has been so up and down.
It's going to be a crazy last 6-7 weeks if the Giants can take care of their business in the next 3 games. What would you say, Lance? You got to win 2 out of the next 3 in order to be in really good shape? I would take the loss this week if it means beating Dallas and Washington.
I was going to say, if you do settle for 2-3, you have to beat Dallas and Washington. So, therefore, you'd have to suck it up and take a loss this week. But, on paper, this is a very much winnable game.
Sure, of course.
So, I think that it's realistic to think if everything falls right and bounces their way, they could very well go 3-0 over the next 3 games. You know, Washington and Dallas have their fair share of issues. And as a couple of callers notated, you know, Dallas is hurting now. Every day it seems to be a new injury report.
Their bye week came at the right time.
But they're probably not going to get those two linebackers back for the Giants game.
No, but DeMarcus Ware will be healthier. Jason Hatcher will play. They hope to have J.J. Wilcox back to get Heath off the field, that safety who looked absolutely lost and bewildered on Sunday night. And they hope to have Morris Claiborne back as well,
which would be a big boost.
B.M. Webb off the field, who also had his issues in that game on Sunday night.
I think 2 out of 3 is reasonable for the Giants to accomplish over this next stretch.
And the one game, if you picked out, that's the most important, I guess it would still have to be probably the Dallas game, right?
Oh, the Cowboy game, especially if you beat Green Bay, you're going to have an opportunity to tie Dallas entering that contest.
Because here's the problem. If you beat Green Bay and you go and you lose to Dallas, right? That means you're two games behind Dallas, and you've already lost a tiebreaker to them. So you're virtually three games then behind the Cowboys with only five games to play.
Because you have to finish a game better than them.
Exactly, because you would lose the head-to-head tiebreaker. Now, if it's a three-way tie, that's not important. You go into other things. But three games to make up and five remaining would be very difficult. So that Cowboy game, to me, still the most important, really, the rest of the year. Let's be honest for a second.
I think that the only loss that they can afford to have during this next stretch is if you split that San Diego-Seattle games in terms of you lose one, you win one. But then that game December 22nd, and I know we're really jumping ahead.
Now remember that.
That game, to me, could make or break the season, and that's at Detroit.
The one game that's actually least important the rest of the way is the Seattle game, and here's why. When you go through those division tiebreakers, common opponents is actually a more important tiebreaker than conference record. So the Giants will not have Seattle as a common opponent with anybody else in the NFC East. So if there's one game you can lose, it's that one. San Diego's still a common opponent. Detroit, a common opponent with the other NFC East teams as well. So if there's one game you can lose, it's that Seattle game, just from a tiebreaker perspective.
And the fact that you brought that up, John, then I would say there's more urgency to beat San Diego, because keep in mind, the Chargers knocked off the Cowboys. The Chargers knocked off the Eagles with that game-winning field goal, I believe, by Nick
Novak.
And
they lost to Washington.
So if you beat San Diego,
it helps
you perhaps get an edge over Dallas and Philly, which we assume is going to be in the mix.
Now keep in mind, that's after head-to-head. That's after division record. So that, I believe, is the third tiebreaker on the list. But still, it's something you can look at moving forward.
But once again, December 22nd against the Lions, that to me could be a game that could dictate what happens in that final week of the season.
And the Lions will be playing that game, too.
Oh, they're going to need to.
They're fighting for not only the NFC North, but also a potential wild card spot. So the Lions will be ready to go that game in Detroit. And if Stafford and Megatron is healthy, it's never going to be an easy game against them. And their defense has played a lot better. What was the prognosis on Nick Fairley, by the way?
I don't think it's as serious as they had.
They indicated. Thought it was going to be very serious. I'm not. I never actually heard how many weeks he was going to be out.
I thought last I read it wasn't going to be as bad, and you're right, because between Fairley and Ndamukong Suh, the last thing they can afford to have is one of those guys out of the mix.
And let's be honest, the Giants have not exactly been stalwarts in the interior of that offensive line either.
Well,
I mean, Jim Cordell against those two guys, it scares you a little bit.
Lions are very good at getting pressure up the gut, as
exactly.
You just pointed out. It's not necessarily about their edge rushers. It's more about the defensive tackles who stop the run and get to the quarterback.
Those two guys against David Deal, who not the player he used to be, Jimmy Cordell, and Kevin Booth had a rough game last week, that's going to be a tall order.
For Eli Manning, it's great that he's going to go to a dome in December, but I would think if they had the choice, John, you would probably prefer to go to Seattle and then have the Lions come to you, because the Lions in that situation would love to have a dome game when the weather gets bad.
Well, not to mention the fact it's very loud, and when it's loud, it makes it even tougher on the offensive line with the snap count, which gives another advantage to those pass rushers on the Lions' defense, which is, once again, a very tall order to slow those guys down. Lance, appreciate the time as always today.
Sounds good. We'll see you later in the week.
201-939-4513. That's the phone call number the rest of the week here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Tomorrow, Paul Dottino and Nina Marks come your way at 9:30 as usual, and they'll be with you on Thursday. Lance and I back on Friday. For Lance Menno, I'm John Schmelk. You guys survived this bad weather here in the Northeast. Be safe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a good one.